Good day. This is your SunSound volunteer reader, Bridget Beckett, and today I will be reading to you from the West Valley View News. Our first article today is Legislation Expands Arizona Teacher Academy Access, written by Alicia Vetner, West Valley View staff writer, on May 2nd, 2025. Arizona's community college students pursuing a bachelor's in education will soon have expanded access to tuition assistance from the Teachers Academy, thanks to new legislation sponsored by a Litchfield Park state representative. Governor Katie Hobbs recently signed House Bill 2765 into law, which will go into effect 90 days after the conclusion of the legislative session, and expand access to the Arizona Teachers Academy to community college students in a program for a bachelor's degree in education. The legislation, sponsored by Representative James Taylor, District 29, Litchfield Park, was a bipartisan effort to improve Arizona public school education. The Teachers Academy originally had a provision for the community colleges to have a post-baccalaureate degree for teachers. In other words, if you already have a degree, then it provides tuition for 2 years to get a teaching degree certificate, Taylor said. This bill erases all of that and allows you to go for 4 years to a community college, get your degree, get a teaching certificate, and go to work teaching. The best part of that is that it's about a quarter of the cost of going to a university. The Arizona Teachers Academy offers tuition coverage for students in a state university or community college education preparation program. Those who receive tuition assistance commit to 1 year of teaching in an Arizona public school for each year they receive the scholarship. Per the bill, which amends Arizona revised statutes, eligible post-secondary institutions for student enrollment in the Teachers Academy include universities under the jurisdiction of the state's Board of Regents and community colleges. Formerly, community colleges had to offer post-baccalaureate programs that led to teacher certification and have entered into an agreement with the Arizona Board of Regents relative to those post-baccalaureate programs and colleges. There's a lot of advantage to the community colleges, both for vocational or higher education, and we're really starting to take advantage of that. This is just another way that we've provided the framework for young people to get into the workforce, Taylor said. These institutions include the Maricopa County Colleges, 10 individually credited colleges that serve approximately 140,000 students. In the West Valley, this includes Glendale Community College and Estrella Mountain Community College. This news could not have come at a better time, as we are only weeks away from celebrating Teachers Appreciation Day, said Dr. Stephen R. Gonzalez, Maricopa County's College Chancellor, said in a statement. By expanding the Arizona Teachers Academy scholarship to include community college students, our aspiring teachers will have access to scholarships that will prepare them to be classroom ready. The driving force behind the Arizona Teachers Academy, Taylor said, is the high vacancies for teachers within the state. With more community college students able to afford the education necessary for a teaching certificate through the Teachers Academy, there will be more teachers in the workforce, Taylor said, therefore improving the quality of education and reducing class sizes. Anytime you have more teachers and you have a greater number to choose from, that competition in the ranks improves with the number of available options of people to do the job, Taylor said. My family is heavy with teachers. I've had a lot of experience with people in education and they love it. The people that do this love it. They love working with children and it gives them the satisfaction in life that you can only get when you're doing something you love. And that was legislation expands Arizona Teachers Academy access. Article is Buckeyes Progress Applauded in the State of the City by Alicia Vetner, West Valley View staff writer, May 1st, 2025. Mayor Eric Osborne, with the help of several city staff and leadership, delivered the Buckeye State of the City address last week, giving residents a glimpse into both last year's success and the future. The address, given via video, available on YouTube and the city's website, details the economic and infrastructure growth in Buckeye thanks to population growth, funding and resident support, as well as the efforts by the mayor and council to make the city a place where residents can work, live, and play. Buckeye's future has never been brighter, Osborne said. With smart planning, strategic investments, and the support of our community, we are building a city where families and businesses can thrive. Several businesses opened new facilities in Buckeye in recent months, bringing hundreds of jobs to the city. Amazon's new distribution hub created over 700 jobs, while Rossett Dress for Less new facility created over 1,300 jobs. It's these businesses, Osborne said, that solidify Buckeye's position as a hub for innovation and opportunity. With every new business, we're making Buckeye an even better place to work, live, and play, he said. There are several new healthcare facilities in the city as well, including Banner Health and Abrazo Health, as the economic development team recognized that many of Buckeye's residents travel to other communities for medical treatment. According to the mayor, these projects are the first of many for the 640-square-mile city that is only 16% built out. Alongside last year's success, the State of the City address touted the future developments coming to Buckeye, including Verado Marketplace and The Landing, as well as Fry's food stores planned for Miller and Broadway Roads, and Sprouts Farmers Market at Roosevelt Street and Verado Way. In total, there were over 9.2 million square feet of development underway or planned in the city, including employment projects. Over 30 million square feet of these projects are in the pipeline, according to the Economic Development Director, Suzanne Boyles. She said that Buckeye's population is about 120,000. By 2040, the city is predicted to have a population of around 300,000. We will almost triple in size in that short period of time, and by doing that, it will actually provide Buckeye some really great opportunities to continue to grow, to attract new industries, Boyle said. Things that we haven't even thought about today could be coming to Buckeye in the future, and we are really excited about what that could look like because our population can support that. The State of the City address detailed the evolution of downtown Buckeye with the continual reconfiguration of Monroe Avenue that increases the area's walkability. On both the east and west side of downtown, there are multifamily housing options underway, supporting businesses and increasing foot traffic. All of this, Osborne said, is for downtown Buckeye to become a gathering place for residents and visitors alike. The city has developed a downtown specific area plan, or DASP, with the input of business owners, residents, and stakeholders. The Monroe restriping, changing the street from a four-lane highway to a main street, is part of this plan. It's not just a vision that sits on a shelf and we hope to accomplish. The DSAP is really about action items to get downtown transformed from being auto-oriented and vehicle-oriented to being really a place for business, a place for pedestrians, said Development Services Director Brian Craig. The city held a workshop on April 23rd to discuss the development of Monroe Avenue. Several improvements to public safety facilities were recently completed or are nearing the finish line in the city, the mayor said, including its Buckeye Police Department Communications Building, which will open this summer and enhance emergency response capabilities. The Joe Foss shooting range reopens in the fall for use by both law enforcement and the public. The city recently opened Fire State 707, and both West Park Fire Station and Victory Fire Station are underway thanks to the passage of Proposition 494, which approved $137 million for public safety and bond funding. With the opening of 707, that was a big move for our department. The increase in service can be realized right away. Now we go into the bond and the support that we got, and we can get to open two more stations and look at public safety training grounds, public safety administration, both of which we desperately need, said Fire Chief Jake Rhodes. Water is Buckeye's most valuable resource, and we are taking bold action to secure it, Osborne said. The city is applying for the Alternative Designation of Assured Water Supply, or ADAWS, which would expand renewable water supplies with a $12 million investment from the state to enhance infrastructure and increase reuse efforts. In partnership with the Governor's Office and the Arizona Department of Water Resources, the city is working to secure nearly 600,000 acre feet of water from the Harquahala Valley, and the Falaron Water Campus will be operational this summer. These investments ensure a sustainable water future for Buckeye, Osborne said. As the city grows, so does its need for major infrastructure investments, the mayor said, detailing several projects underway, largely thanks to voter-approved bonds and the Capital Improvement Program. Improvements include widening projects, new traffic signals, intersection improvements, and lighting improvements. Among the improvements most requested by residents is the improvement of the Jackrabbit I-10 interchange, funded by Proposition 479 and up for construction bid later this year. The project is expected to cost $65 million. Construction itself is expected to start spring 2026, and it will take approximately 15 months to complete. The State of the City address also detailed several of Buckeye's community service initiatives. Among these is the Dementia-Friendly Key Initiative, which helps individuals and caregivers facing memory loss. The city also offers housing assistance, utility relief, food programs, and veteran services in partnership with Maricopa County and the Salvation Army. For more information about this year's State of the City, or to read the accompanying publication created by Buckeye staff, visit buckeyeaz.gov/government/state-of-the-city. And that was Buckeye's Progress applauded in the State of the City. Our next article from the West Valley View News is Anaya Walker's Family Pleas for Answers, written by Joe McHugh, West Valley View staff writer, April 30th, 2025. After 5 years, Anaya Walker's family is continuing its search for answers concerning their late daughter. The family, the Buckeye Police Department, and Silent Witness gathered local media at Double Butte Cemetery to address the public in hopes of uncovering evidence from the community. Hopefully someone that's watching this segment here will remember something about that day, said Mike Fisher, a detective with Silent Witness. Hopefully, somebody will remember. Maybe someone working for a car dealership that remembers missing this vehicle. The suspect vehicle had a mirror, missing parts of the bumper, and hopefully some body shop might also remember that. On May 22, 2020, police located the then 16-year-old Walker deceased at the median of the I-10 near Watson Road. Responding investigators determined that she had been hit by a car. The suspect vehicle was later determined to be a 2016 or 2018 Honda Civic LX or LE with a midnight burgundy pearl color. In the years following the incident, details were unveiled that Walker had been a victim of sex trafficking when she was 13 years old. Jamal Pennington, one of the men in connection with Walker's sex trafficking, was convicted in August 2023. To further the case's outreach to the public, the Buckeye Police Department and Silent Witness partnered together to use anonymity to entice the community to support the investigation without fear of exposure. The two agencies expanded even further to equip the use of digital billboards near the I-10 and Miller Road. This partnership also decided to increase the cash reward for information useful to the case to $12,000. Walker's mother, Shrikia Rimes, spoke passionately about the advisory, sharing her emotions and urgency to find more information about her daughter's case. "We are exhausted," she said. "I read the comments and the stories that are shared on social media, and I want people to know that we appreciate it for the prayers, for the kind words, for the gestures of sharing the story. I am looking for answers. If you are responsible, I read something that recently that said, what if it was a kid and they did it and they were just as afraid as Anaya? I want to say to you, I forgive you already, but I need answers. You're the only one who can tell me what happened. You're the only one that can tell us and give us certain answers about that day." Anyone with answers to the case is urged to call 480-WITNESS or 480-TESTIGO for Spanish speakers. And that was Anaya Walker's Family Pleas for Answers. Our next article is Goodyear Police Department Uses AI Images of Wanted Suspects by Alicia Vetner, West Valley View staff writer, April 28th, 2025. I would first like to describe the cover image of this article. It reads, "Attempt to identify attempted kidnapping suspect, a 50 to 60 year old male, approximately 6 feet tall, approximately 200 pounds, blue eyes, brown hair," with the note that this is an AI generated image and it's based on victim/witness statements and does not depict a real person. The caption to this image is that an AI-generated image based on the victim and witness statements of an attempted kidnapping suspect. It further notes, as of publication, the suspect remains at large, and anyone with tips should call 623-932-1220, and this is submitted from the Goodyear Police Department. Now, on to the article. The Goodyear Police Department is receiving assistance from artificial intelligence in apprehending criminals by creating realistic facial composites from eyewitness memories. The department is among the first to use this method, which combines traditional forensic sketch tools with technological innovations. GDP already applied it in hopes of capturing a suspect in a recent kidnapping attempt, The idea came to Goodyear police officer and forensic artist Michael Bonacera just a few weeks ago after testing ChatGPT and recognizing its potential benefits for his profession. Although he had traditionally created facial composites using pen and paper, his entry into the digital realm of forensic artistry offers the opportunity for more lifelike 3D images of suspects. I was just wondering what AI would do to one of my drawings if the technology was this good, Bonacera said. I plugged in one of the drawings, and it made my jaw drop, because as an artist, you become meticulous. You look at people's faces differently when you're a forensic artist, and it was the exact image I had in my head that obviously a pencil drawing couldn't exactly portray. The need for forensic artistry will not go away because of artificial intelligence, Bonacera said. He still needs to work with witnesses, show them characteristic images from the FBI's facial recognition reference sheet, and making changes as the victim remembers the suspected criminal. Now, however, AI is an additional tool that allows them to make those changes quickly. Oftentimes, in interviews, juveniles will mistake the ages of older individuals, Bonacera said. I'm in my early 30s, and if I go ask a young person how old you think I am, they'll probably tell me I'm 50 years old. That does happen often. With AI, we could do an age progression, and just by simply telling it to reverse the age of this person by 5 years, or add 5 years, it does that. We can't exactly do that on a pencil and paper in that time frame, so it's quite amazing. The police department has used an image of an attempted kidnapping suspect based on victim and witness statements. The incident involved a young female student walking near Village Boulevard and Watkins Street around noon when a male suspect grabbed her arm and tried to kidnap her. The victim escaped, ran home, and alerted her parents, who contacted the police. There are several agencies asking if their suspect drawings can be transformed with AI, Bonacera said. He said he is already brainstorming the ways the department can use it to apprehend criminals. For example, he is exploring the possibility of using these renderings with the facial recognition software available at the state level. The way technology is moving and the realness of these images, I'm really hopeful, Bonacera said. Hopefully, AI will be something in the near future that will just completely change the whole game of sticking an image into a program, then running booking photos or driver's license photos and coming up with composites or similar people. And that was Goodyear Police Department uses AI images of wanted suspects. Our next article is from the Wickenburg Sun. From May 1st, 2025, titled 50-51 Protests Hit Wickenburg. The 50-51 movement made its way to Wickenburg today as citizens were seen holding signs in opposition of the Trump administration at the Haseyampa Riverwalk. With the goal of holding 50 protests in 50 states on one day, participants from across the country are speaking out against what they believe are anti-democratic and illegal actions of the Trump administration and the influence billionaires have on the federal government. And that was 50-51 protests hit Wickenburg. Also, from the Wickenburg Sun, we have Brooks named Western Woman of Distinction, by Claire Halliburton, editor, from April 30th, 2025. Fifth-generation Wickenburg native Julie Brooks was recently presented the Elizabeth Hudson Smith Award at the Desert Calabreros Western Museum's Western Woman of Distinction Luncheon on April 15th. awarded yearly to recognize and celebrate accomplished women of the West and to inspire other women to further the Western spirit, Brooks was awarded for her continued contributions to the Wickenburg community in several forms: economic development, event planning, tourism, governmental affairs, and nonprofit management. With expertise in public and governmental relations, volunteer recruitment, marketing, special event production, committee leadership, and film location services, Brooks has continued to promote Wickenburg, a town near and dear to her family's heart. Brooks's great-great-grandfather, Ramon Macias, was one of the original pioneers of Wickenburg, moving to town in the late 1850s, establishing a ranch along the Haciampa River that would later become a 160-acre 6M ranch. The eldest of five children, Macias and her siblings, were fortunate to be able to grow up on the ranch, 5 acres of which she and her husband Art still own today. Crediting the serenity of Wickenburg's mountains as the reason why she still resides here today, Brooks often reminisces about her great-great-grandfather's life in town. "I can imagine my great-great-grandfather on horseback, riding the desert and riding through the river, which was much narrower and filled with a lot of trees on both sides," she stated. "I can imagine them just looking at their surroundings and thinking, this is really a spot that I want to have my family established." Noting that Wickenburg's beautiful setting regularly captures the hearts of out-of-towners wanting to make Wickenburg their potential home, she stated, "Whether it's the Hispanic pioneers here, the early miners, or the Yavapai Indians that traded with our ranchers, they could tell that this was, I think, a really spiritual place, and it still is today." Known for her 33-year tenure with the Wickenburg Chamber of Commerce, Brooks's love of volunteerism started at a very early age when she was taught to appreciate nature and her community. She stated, "We take care of our nature, but we also contribute what we have back to our community, whether it's leadership or volunteerism." A member of the local Girl Scout troop as a young girl, Brooks would regularly volunteer at what is known today as the Wickenburg Senior Center, packing meals for the less fortunate in town, stating, "That was one of the major volunteer efforts as a young woman that you could see the direct benefit of volunteering that our community needs were being met by this agency." Teaching her children that volunteering for one's community is important, she stated, "They know that giving back means that you are at least celebrating some piece of your family heritage and the knowledge that it makes a difference." According to Brooks, there is always someone that can be helped, stating, "You just raise your hand, or if you hear somebody that is in need, you find a way to help them, or you gather other friends to assist you in making that need pass. And it's just been a part of my life and will always be part of that." As this year's recipient, Brooks stated that she was very humbled by the honor, noting that she is an avid admirer of Elizabeth Hudson Smith for her tenacity, volunteerism, entrepreneurship, and her love of Wickenburg. With several of her family members buried in Garcia Cemetery, Brooks regularly visits Smith's headstone and ensures it is in good condition, honoring the impact she made on Wickenburg. Because of this connection with Smith, Brooke feels that the award was made all the more special. To have Elizabeth Hudson Smith's name attached to this award brought home again the friendship that I know my grandfathers and my great-grandfathers knew of Elizabeth, she stated. "So it really meant a lot to receive it and to be chosen for this very prestigious award." According to the DCWM Executive Director, Dan Finley, honoring Brooks this year was not a difficult choice, stating, The award is meant to exemplify the achievements of Elizabeth Hudson Smith, and Julie does that in spades. She is first and foremost a multi-generational Arizonan and has celebrated the Western lifestyle for her entire life. And then she put in an incredible 30 years at the Wickenburg Chamber, doing nothing but support the Western lifestyle in Wickenburg. Through that time, she was an easy choice for us this year. While Brooks retired from the Chamber of Commerce in July of 2021, she continues to volunteer as a chair of the Chamber Transportation Committee, serving closely with the Maricopa County Department of Transportation and ADOT, lobbying for additional funding for the town's highways. She also continues to volunteer with the Chamber, assisting in any way that she can to promote Wickenburg and its history. And that was Brooks named Western Woman of Distinction. Our next article from the Wickenburg Sun is Brown Sisters Win Big at the Maricopa County Fair by Claire Halliburton, editor, April 30th, 2025. Wickenburg sisters Kate and Bridget Brown recently earned top honors at the 2025 Maricopa County Fair, a win that some would say brought home the bacon. Growing up around livestock from a young age, both girls have a passion for animals and decided to continue their agricultural journeys in the form of showmanship competitions, with the most recent one being at the Maricopa County Fair. Taking home this year's title of Best Showman of All Breeds, the highest distinction in the fair's showmanship competition, Kate Brown impressed the judges with her poise, knowledge, and strong connection with her animals. Stating that she enjoys the responsibility, the traveling, and the feeling she gets in the ring, Kate commented that the best part of competing is hitting all the gaps in the ring and doing everything right. Competing in swine showmanship for the past 4 years and making her debut in beef showmanship this year, Kate said, "My favorite category of showing is swine showmanship because I have been showing swine longer than I have been showing cattle, and because you can control showmanship more than market because it is about you and not what the judge likes about your animal." While taking home a winning title is the goal of most competitors, Kate stated that the hardest part about competing is leaving the ring knowing you could have won everything or you could have placed higher, but you did not because of one little thing. While excited about her win, Kate stated, "I feel good with what I accomplished, but the fact that I could have brought home 3 more buckles and I didn't haunts me every day." About to graduate into intermediate showmanship, Kate said that she is ready to take on the competition. "I would like to come in as an intermediate, ready and prepared for what is headed my way," she stated. "A lot of kids don't know my name or don't believe that I am good, so I would like to prove to everyone of those kids wrong." Not only does Kate want to make a name for herself, but she wants that name to be held to a high standard, stating, "I also want to make sure people respect me. Some kids like to brag about how good they are and how many buckles they have won. I don't brag or say how many buckles I have. I just want to beat them in the ring." Also impressing the judges at the county fair was Kate's sister, Bridget Brown, who took home a second place finish in the swine showmanship competition and a first place finish in the beef showmanship, where Judge Lee Rinker described her as intense, focused, and incredibly well prepared. "The intensity of this little girl was top-notch," Rinker continued. "Her knowledge of her animal was on point, and she deserved to be number one in the beef competition." Bridget has also been competing in the swine showmanship for the past 3 years and also made her debut in beef showmanship, stating that her favorite part of livestock showing is the connection she makes with her animals and beating her sister. While competing through the hardships of sibling rivalry can take its toll, Bridget stated that the hardest part of competing is getting to the point of where I am now. She stated, "It took a lot of practice and effort. I practice every morning and every evening before and after school." Proud of her recent accomplishments at the county fair, Bridget is excited to return next year, aiming to win the round robin, which consists of winning each animal species category: goat, sheep, swine, and beef. She stated, "I won 5 buckles this year, including best of breed Duroc, but I would like to win the champion round robin, which my sister Kate won this year." Regarding the girls' recent achievements, their mom, Kathy Brown, stated, "We are beyond proud of them. They work hard every single day to care for their animals and be the best they can be, not just in the ring, but in everything they do." Continuing to inspire young agriculturalists from across Arizona, the Brown sisters are a prime example that hard work and dedication pay off. And that was Brown Sisters Win Big at the Maricopa County Fair. Also from the Wickenburg Sun, we have Wickenburg Clean and Beautiful, recognized by the BLM. This article is from April 30th, 2025. Wickenburg Clean and Beautiful was recently recognized by the Bureau of Land Management for their hard work and dedication to keeping the Wickenburg Desert clean by removing thousands of pounds of trash and dumped materials from the Wickenburg Desert. According to Clean and Beautiful director Judy Rice, the group is thrilled by the acknowledgement of all its hard work. Regarding the organization, BLM stated, "For National Volunteer Week, we're sending our thanks to Wickenburg Clean and Beautiful. Since 2020, Wickenburg Clean and Beautiful has held regular cleanups of public lands around Wickenburg and raised public awareness on responsible recreation. Through their efforts, they removed 21,000 pounds of trash from Bureau of Land Management and state lands last year. They also regularly meet people recreating on public lands, and they provide education, activities, and events to organized groups. Thanks to Wickenburg Clean and Beautiful and Wickenburg Conservation Foundation for your continued support of public lands." For more information on Wickenburg Clean and Beautiful, please visit wickenburgtrails.org/clean-and-beautiful. To contact by email, please email info@wickenburgtrails.org or call 623-341-5977. And that was Wickenburg Clean and Beautiful, recognized by BLM. Our next article from the Wickenburg Sun is WCA Baseball Awaits Playoff Seedings by Kirk McKnight, Sun correspondent, from April 30th, 2025. And in this article, we have an image of WCA's Hayes Carrera taking a swing during his team's victory over Ajo last Wednesday. It goes on to say, "The Lions finished the regular season with a 10-2-1 record and will open the playoffs Saturday, May 3rd. On to our article. Just like it did to begin last season, the WCA Lions varsity baseball team has won 5 straight games to finish it. Last Monday, April 21st, the Lions pounced on Flagstaff Christian by scoring 4 runs in each of the opening 3 frames. Scoring twice at the bottom of the 4th, Flagstaff Christian prolonged the game a further inning, but WCA tacked on another 4 in the 5th. Despite scoring 3 times in the bottom of the 5th, Flagstaff Christian ran out of outs and lost 16-5 via the Mercury rule. The Lions were led by senior Calden Dickinson, who had 3 RBIs and 2 hits. Sophomore Ross Engen and junior Bam Hoag knocked in 2 RBIs each, combined for 3 hits and 4 runs scored. Sophomore Azale Flores led the team with 3 runs scored and co-led the team in hits with 2, along with Engen and both Calden and Braden Dickinson. Hoag, Engen, Calden Dickinson, and seniors Xavier Morales and Isaac Matney had stolen a base each for the Lions, and the team only committed 1 defensive error. Matney and sophomore Matt Sheehan led the Lions from the mound, striking out 8 batters, walking 3, and allowing a combined 3 earned runs. The Lions closed out their regular season last Wednesday, April 23rd, against Ajo, defeating the Red Raiders 5-2. Despite going down 1-0 after 2 innings and trailing up until the bottom of the 4th, WCA would take the lead 2-1. Ajo tied the game in the top of the 6th, but the Lions scored 3 in the bottom half of the frame to go up 5-2 and would hold on in the 7th for the victory. The Lions were led at the plate by Matney, who had an RBI over 2 hits. Braden Dickinson also collected 2 hits while scoring a run, and Morales had a double, knocking in a run and later scoring a run. Sheehan also added an RBI, and Hoag added a run for the Lions. WCA, record 10-2-1, will have a few days off before their play-up matchup this Saturday, May 3rd, against an opponent to be determined. The results of Saturday's game will be included in next week's edition of the Wickenburg Sun. And that was WCA Baseball Awaits Playoff Seedings. Also from the Wickenburg Sun, why Arizona is among the worst places for naked gardening, and it's not just the cacti. From Today's News Herald, dated April 28th, 2025. For World Naked Gardening Day. Arizona's sun may be relentless, but enthusiasm for naked gardening clearly isn't. In Lost Lawn Starters 2025 rankings of the best cities for World Naked Gardening Day on May 3rd, Arizona's cities fell flat. Phoenix ranked 432nd out of 500, with Tucson, Scottsdale, Mesa, Chandler, and Glendale crowding the bottom of the list. The rankings, based on nudist populations, public nudity laws, Google search trends, and weather forecasts, showed Arizona cities struggling in nearly every category, despite ideal sunshine. Legal restrictions, low search interest, and scorching temperatures made the Grand Canyon State a tough place to shed more than a gardening glove. Lake Havasu City, Bullhead City, and Kingman didn't appear in the data, likely due to population size, but the climate alone suggests that gardening naked, or even gardening at all, can be a thorny proposition. When simply keeping a tomato plant alive is a battle against the sun, wind, and rocky soil, ditching protective clothing hardly sounds appealing. The risks go beyond sunburn. In Arizona yards, prickly pear, cholla, and saguaro cacti are about as common as gardening gnomes elsewhere. One wrong move, and World Naked Gardening Day could end with a very uncomfortable visit to urgent care. Nationally, Miami topped the rankings, followed by Seattle and Austin, places where the laws are lush and the risks of cactus contact are considerably lower. In Arizona, it might be safer to celebrate the holiday with a sun hat, a bottle of water, and a strong respect for spines. And that was why Arizona is the worst place, one of the worst places in the world for naked gardening, and it's not just the cacti. From the Wickenburg Sun, our article is 6 things you should know about Arizona wildfire and summer preparedness in 2025. From Today's News Herald, April 28th, 2025. With record heat, wildfire risks, and soaring electricity demands on the horizon, Arizona utilities say they are bracing for one of their toughest summers yet. At the Arizona Corporation Commission's 2025 Summer Preparedness Workshop, officials from APS, SRP, TEP, Unisource, and AEPCO unveiled new plans to harden the grid, protect communities, and keep the lights on when it matters most. Here's what you need to know. Number one, utilities expect record-breaking power demands this summer. Arizona's largest electricity providers forecast another summer of historic peak usage. Together, they are prepared to deliver more than 24,000 megawatts of electricity to meet statewide demand during the hottest months. Unisource, which serves many northern Arizona communities, projects a peak load of 526 megawatts with 90 megawatts in reserve. Number two, APS and SRP are adding major new resources. Arizona Public Service, or APS, is bringing more than 1,550 megawatts of new solar and battery storage online, along with 175 megawatts of natural gas generation. Salt River Project, or SRP, expanded its renewable resources last year and now plans to operate with a total capacity exceeding 9,800 megawatts. Number three, wildfire mitigation is now central to utility planning. With wildfire threats intensifying, utilities are expanding fire mitigation programs. Unisource and its sister company TEP are bolstering inspections, expanding tree trimming cycles, and using drones and infrared imaging to detect wildfire threats early. APS and SRP are also investing in artificial intelligence smoke detection, real-time weather monitoring, and advanced fire modeling to spot and respond to risks faster. Number four, public safety power shutoffs, or PSPS, are expanding. APS and Unisource are broadening the use of public safety power shutoffs, which temporarily cut power to high-risk areas during extreme fire weather. APS added 65 circuits, affecting 64,000 new customers. Unisource launched a new searchable online map that allows customers to check and see if their address could be affected by a PSPS event. Number five, vegetation management efforts have intensified. Utilities are clearing vegetation around power lines more aggressively than ever. Unisource is focusing on hazard tree removal and creating defensible space around poles, while APS and SRP continue statewide tree trimming, drone inspections, and infrared scans. These efforts aim to reduce the chance of power equipment sparking a fire. Number six, coal plant retirements are moving forward. Despite national attention on coal energy, APS and TEP said their coal plant shutdowns will proceed. APS closed the Cholla power plant in March after regulatory challenges and high costs made continued operation unfeasible. TEP, which shares operations management with Unisource, plans to retire units at the Springerville Generating Station after the summers of 2027 and 2032. And that was 6 things you should know about Arizona's wildfire and summer preparedness in 2025. Dean and Johnson win moonshot competition. article from the Wickenburg Sun, April 30th, 2025. On Thursday, April 17th, the Moonshot Rural Arizona Pitch Competition took place at the Wickenburg Library, giving local entrepreneurs a chance to pitch their business ideas to successful economic development leaders. Winners Carrie Lane and Trina Johnson presented their business endeavor, Way Out West Wellness, or WOW, W-O-W-W, as a potential holistic wellness center that would offer a powerful mind-body transformation to its clients. By providing resources such as Pilates reformer training, red light therapy, and brain health coaching, the pair believed that the business would address emotional, physical, and cognitive health all in one place. Their win secured them a spot at the Moonshot State Finals in Prescott this October, where they will compete for a chance to win $10,000. Lane and Johnson anticipate the opening business of January. Lane and Johnson anticipate opening the business January of 2026. And that was Lane and Johnson win Moonshot competition. Several Summer School Opportunities Available for High School Students by Colleen Peterson, WVA Program Director, from April 30th, 2025. While summer is often a time when students want to forget about school, there are students who would benefit from taking a course during the summer. Taking a summer school course can help a student work ahead to create space in their school schedule to take other courses they are interested in. It can help a student get back on track to graduate on time. It can improve a grade from a course previously taken. And it can be a way for a student to stay academically engaged throughout the summer. If one of these scenarios applies to your student, we can help. This summer, Wickenburg Virtual Academy, or WVA, will offer a one-semester online course to any Wickenburg High School or Wickenburg Virtual Academy student that needs or wants to take a course, math, science, English, or social studies. The WVA Summer School is a five-week session. Students will work on average 25 hours per week to complete the course. Students will primarily work from home or on the road, wherever they may be traveling during the summer session. However, if they have never taken a class using our online platform before, we encourage them to come to our lab prior to the start date so that we can train them and get them started the right way with their course. Information students need to know about summer school. Students must have their own computer or laptop and access to the internet. Online summer school is fast-paced. Students must start right away and keep up with their daily work. Classes start Tuesday, May 27th and end Thursday, June 26th. If a student has not successfully completed 50% of the course by June 12th, the student will be dropped with a withdraw F on the transcript from the course. The student is required to complete the entire course in order to take the final. And the final exam must be passed with 60% to earn credit for the course and must be taken in a proctored setting. All of the teachers will have office hours, so they will be available to students to provide extra help and support. Our lab will also be open during school hours, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., Monday through Thursday, for students to come in, print materials, submit assignments, have a quiet place to work, and take the finals. Our staff will be communicating with families on a weekly basis to keep them informed on how their student is doing and offer any support that is needed. Any Wickenburg High School student wanting to take a summer course will need to pay $100 to take the course. This fee can be paid at the Wickenburg High School bookstore. If the fee is a barrier to a student taking a summer class, please reach out to us and find out what options are available to assist with the fee. It is our hope The charging for attendance will build financial accountability from the students, increasing their level of commitment and ultimately the success rate in passing the class. In addition, this tuition fee will offset some of the costs of running summer school. Any Wickenburg High School or surrounding area student wishing to learn more about summer school can reach out to our office at 928-684-6717 or contact one of the counselors at Wickenburg High School at 928-684-6600. And that was several summer school opportunities available for high school students. Well, that's all the time we have for today, listeners. Thank you for joining me, Bridget Beckett, in reading the West Valley News and the Wickenburg Sun. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer. Please stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds of Arizona.